Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Today on our agenda is Perek Ches of Nesiv HaTshuva, which is the last Perek of the Nesiv HaTshuva. And the focal point for the Maral in this Perek is, in a certain sense, a Gemara which speaks about the most difficult of tshuvas. The most difficult of tshuvas. The focal point, the starting point for his discussion, is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, which he is going to explain. It's a famous Gemara, at least a story in the Gemara. One story which the Gemara brings in this context is famous. But the Gemara says as follows, that Kol baya lo yeshuvun leyasigu archais chayim. It says all those who arrive there lo yeshuvun, they will never return. Right? Sounds like something spooky, right? Anyone who's come there has never been known to return, and will never achieve the paths of life. Says Mar v'chimi acher leyshavu echen yasigu. Even if they do come back, they won't come back alive. They might come back, but they won't come back alive. What does that mean? Says the Gemara, that pasuk in Mishlei, Kol bayelo yeshuvun, is a reference to minus, to heresy. Kol aperish miminus mayas. Anyone who separates from that will die. Says the Gemara, what are you talking about? We have a certain story of a person who did come back from that and was fine. Says Mu'ahud lehadraba shapir mishumachi lemesa. Says she didn't really properly do a full blown tshuva. Another version has it, miminus in me'avera loy, not from avera. Says the Gemara, from avera also. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is that there are two areas. One is minus, heresy, and the other is avera, which is immorality, sexual immorality, on which it would be said kol bayel lo yeshuvun, that somebody who got into that will not be able to get out of that. And if they will be able to get out of that, it will be so traumatic that mayas, that the person won't be able to figure out how to be able to continue, how to be able to continue to live from it. Now, we have to understand exactly what it means, because minus, what does that mean? A person doesn't believe in God, right? So minus, when the Gemara speaks about minus, it always speaks about different gradations and levels of minus. This person was evidently really, really wrapped up in this belief. And likewise, avera. There could be a person who did averos of immorality. But there also could be something where it mamish requires detox. The person was completely, completely involved in it. And the illustration the Gemara gives of a person who was completely involved in it, who ended up doing tshuva, but the tshuva, quote-unquote, cost him his life, was a man named Elazar ben Durdaya, ultimately known as Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya, which is the fairly famous story that the Gemara tells here. And the Gemara says, they said about Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya, he took advantage of the services of every zayna, of every prostitute in the world. He heard about a certain such woman overseas, and she would take a whole pouch full of dinarim, of gold coins, as her pay. So it was a long trip, it was a dangerous trip, and it was an expensive proposition. And then the Gemara says, "B'shas hergel dover," as they were preparing for the act, "Heficha," she passed gas. Amra, and she said, "K'shem shaficha zueinu chizeres l'mkai makach alazer ben durdai ein makab l'isai b'tshuva." Just like that, gas escaped, and it will not come back. So too, Elazar ben Durdaya, you can't come back. You're lost. You can never come back. So Elazar ben Durdaya got Musar from this zona. Halach v'yasha ben shnei harim u'gvois. He stood between two mountains, hills. Amar harim u'gvois bakshu alay rachmim. Pray for me. Amru loy, they said, ad shonam vakshim alecha nevagish al atzmeinu. We're too busy praying for ourselves. As it says, ki harim yamushu v'agvois timutena, describes in Yeshaya the end of days how the mountains and hills will move and will collapse. So we're not so sure of ourselves to pray for you. So he turned the heaven and earth. He said, you pray for me. They said, we have to pray for ourselves, as it says, sun and the moon. They said, we have to pray for ourselves, and so on. Stars, we have to pray for ourselves. Omar, he said, Ein adavar tali elabi. He says, I can't ask anybody else. It's up to me. If I do it, great. If not, not. He niach roshe ben birkav. He put his head between his knees, the gob of chia, and he was overwhelmed with weeping, at shiyotza nishmasay, till his soul left him. Yotza baskel v'amar Ablozer ben Adadaya muzum al-chayelma, but a heavenly voice came out and said, Ablozer ben Adadaya is ready for the Olam Haba, and the Gemara says, what do you see? You see that it was Avera, and he died from doing tshuva from it. The Gemara says, well, normally it's only minos, but by Avera, when you're so into it, like Rabbi Lazar ben Durdaya, has the same difficulty, and it's very hard to do tshuva, and if tshuva is done, it can't be survived. And Rebbe, the Gemara, famous footnote to the story is that Rebbe cried, and he said, you see, here's a person who can gain his Olam Haba in 1 minute, b'shachas, in one moment, so to speak. Right, look at this. Right, the heavenly voice came out and said, Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya comes to Olam Haba. He's ready for Olam Haba despite a life of sin, but he was shoved in the last minute, and he gets called Rebbe. He gets called Rebbe for this. That's the Gemara. So what this Gemara really is speaking about, okay, on the one hand, you know, you could have the inspiration, it could be inspiring, the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya, that in the end, he did tshuva. And the tshuva was so beautifully accepted. But on the other hand, it's also a pretty frightening Gemara, because it's saying it's so hard to do tshuva in this situation. And even if the person does tshuva, it's kleitness, you know, that's how hard it is. So what is this? How do we place this in the framework of what we understand about tshuva, about what the Maral has taught us about tshuva? And the Maral will establish this an explanation which is in line with the principles of tshuva that we learned before, most specifically principle number 3. What was principle number 3 of the Maral of tshuva? If you recall, principle number 3 was that tshuva is return, it's restoration, not renovation. Tshuva is not self-improvement. Tshuva is not getting yourself to be able to run 5 miles instead of 4 miles. Right? I never was able to do this before. Now I'm able to do it. I was never able to face, to daven so well. Now I'm able to do it. You know, working yourself up to something. Tshuva is bringing yourself back to something. Tshuva is return. It's not redesigning your basement. It's, if heaven forbid the basement is flooded, taking out the rotten stuff, the spoiled carpet, the ruined drywall, and replacing it with what it had before so that it's back to where it was. Tshuva is predicated on the fact that at the core, the person starts off and is good, and Avera, when the person does things wrong, it's a deviation, and tshuva can work because we're really just really setting it back to where it was, to where it was meant to be. That was one of the core principles that the Maral taught us about tshuva, and he used many different chazal. He interpreted many different chazal in line with this. One simple one that comes to mind is when chazal and the pasuk speak about tshuva as refuah, as healing. Healing is where something had gone wrong, and now we're just restoring the person to his original condition. According to the Maral, that makes tshuva more understandable. Right? That makes tshuva more understandable, because if your natural state is goodness and this was just a deviation, so then you're just coming home. And of course, what that's the word tshuva means, return. It's not shipur, right, which is a term Chazal sometimes use when they speak about tshuva. Right? Shapru, shofar, they say, shapru masechem, improve your actions. No, this is coming back to where you were. Remember I told you, Ramesh Shapiro says, based on Maral, right, that Yom Kippurim, the term Kippurim is to wipe off. Right? Like you shmir, the Gemara says, kapore zov, the thing which he used to sprinkle the blood, when his finger had the blood on it from the sacrifice, he would then smear it off on the edge of the kli so the blood would go back in. That's why it's called, what does that mean? Scrape it off. It's the day of scraping? Yeah, it's the day of scraping. Because when you recognize that at the core, the person is good, then the aveira is just like a layer of junk, a layer of grime that's on top. And Yom Kippur is just scraping off the layer of grime. That's one of his core understandings. However, the sobering part of this Gemara and of this story and of what the Maral's lesson here in this perek is, that it is le'aleinu rachmona litzlan, possible for a person to distort their essence to a point where it could hardly be called coming back, where the person is, in the words of the Maral, ish acher, there's somebody else. And it's not that, oh, I'm really this, I'm just doing something else. They are somebody else. They could, heaven forbid, distort their essence so dramatically that they mamish become like somebody else. And while even then, says the Gemara, they could still do tshuva, but a tshuva which is going to be not wiping off something that you were doing, but a change of the essence, is gut-wrenchingly difficult, soul-wrenchingly difficult. You know, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter famously said, I don't really remember what he famously said, the exact nusach of what he famously said, but I think he said that it is easier to learn shas many times than to change one character trait, that's one mida. Huh?
That's a very discouraging statement.
Yeah, it is. It's a very, very, very sobering statement. But it's also a reality. It's a reality-basing statement. Rabbi Yisrael Lemaisa was a very inspiring person. He wasn't a very discouraging person. You see from what he created, what he developed. But one of the most significant things about Musar, we have to realize, is self-knowledge. It's the predicate of all Musar. So you can't improve yourself if you don't know yourself, if you don't understand yourself. And Rabbi Yisrael was very real. To change a character trait of a person, it's easy to do all kinds of actions. It's hard to change, fundamentally change. So here the Gemara says that this kind of stuff, this could get so, this where a person is aduk b'minus, aduk b'avera, it could be so gut-wrenching that it's hard to change, hard to get out of it, and if you do, it's mamish traumatic. Nothing short of traumatic. Yeah.
Why is the essence so fragile to begin with that it's easy to move it in the wrong direction, but hard to move it back?
That's a good question. Okay, the truth is, it seems from everything we learned here in Nesivat Tshuva, is that it's not so fragile in the sense that we have this concept of tshuva, which is always there to be able to bring a person back to it. But you're asking, the guy left his essence to become involved in Aveira, and that didn't kill him, so why to leave the Aveira and go back to where he was before, why is that going to kill him? And that's a good question. I'm not ready to answer that question so easily. The way the Maral speaks about these two areas, these are the big two. Now, we often speak about the big three, not Chevy, whatever, GM, but we speak about Gili Arayus, Shvichus Damim, and Avodah Zarah. Adultery, murder, and idol worship. And there is a significance to that big three, Hakina, Hataiva, Vahakovod, many things that match up with that. But we also have a description of two yitzarim, two desires that a person has. The murder is not usually classified so much as a desire. Murder is vicious. It's not something which you lust. It's just to be destructive, right? The nachash, the snake, you know, just to destroy. Desire comes in two forms, and we speak specifically here about desire because it's separation from desire which is so overwhelming. And we speak about the desire for Avodah Zarah and the desire for Arayas. In that famous passage in the Gemara in Yuma, the Samach Tes, where the Gemara speaks about when the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah were helping reconstruct the Jewish people for the second Beis HaMikdash, they said, Hashem, could you please get rid of this desire for Avodah Zarah? It was a tremendous desire, which we see brought the Jewish people down during the period of the Melachim, of the kings, during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. So they succeeded in getting rid of this desire for Avodah Zarah. They said, hey, we're on a roll, let's get rid of the desire for Arayas also. But they realized that the world couldn't function without that, that they couldn't find eggs, the way the Gemara says it. There would be no marriage and reproduction without that. Okay. Those are two big yitzarim, right? And the way the Maharal describes it is that the yitzra, the arayas, is obviously a very, very physical desire, very, very physical desire. It's a yitzer of the guf, and the yitzer of Avodah Zarah, which is the harder one for us to understand, is a desire of the nefesh, almost a desire of the seichel. It's a desire of the mind, of the soul, not a desire of the body. We don't understand even what that means in a certain sense. They did such a good job at being mevatel that yetzer, but we don't understand, right? To us, when you speak about the mind and the soul, you're speaking about sort of like the sort of objectivity. We do speak about the soul thirsting, tzama nafshi lelekim lekel chai, right? A spiritual thirst. That's a taste of that. Of course, those are words which were said by David HaMelech when there was still a desire, lahavdil, for Avodah Zarah as well. But it's something which we try to develop in ourselves, a desire. And you see that to some degree a spiritual thirst still exists in the world and expresses itself in all kinds of different directions, including the correct ones. But says the Maharal, those thirsts, those desires are what are so strong, and when a person finds themselves trapped, involved in those desires, it's transformative, and it's very hard for the person to change, to get out of it. Yeah?
Excuse the basic question, but in studying Horatius just yesterday, are you saying that the Jew does not believe in original sin, but we really believe in original goodness for an individual?
That's what the Chumash says. That's
what
the Chumash says.
We
don't believe in the Catholic version of original sin. We read the Chumash, and the Chumash says Adam HaRishon started in Gan Eden. He started in Gan Eden, and then some force outside of him, called the serpent, the snake, came and got him to sin. So that was the first sin. That was quote unquote the original sin. But does that make it that now, therefore, his core is sin? Or do we say his core is the way Hashem created him in Gan Eden? And then he went and got messed up. And now the trick is to get unmessed. To put it back, I want to just tell you very briefly something which I mentioned yesterday in the shir before Mincha, because it's relevant to the question which you ask, to what the Maharal is discussing here. It was really built upon, to a great measure, a Maharal which we learned together in the Tiferes Yisrael. The Maharal in Tiferes Yisrael, if you remember, speaks, has a whole section, so beginning at the halfway point of the Sefer, starting Perek Lamed Vav in Rabbi Hartman's edition. It's the beginning of the second volume. That's why it's easy to remember where it starts, but he has a whole series of prakim on comparing, on studying and comparing and contrasting the two versions of the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments as they are taught in Shmos, when they're originally given, and the Ten Commandments as repeated by Moshe Rabbeinu and Devarim. And one of the things which he speaks about is the last commandment, where there's a very big difference. And then in the first version it says, Leisach Moed, Beis Re'echa, don't covet your friend's house. Then Leisach Moed, Eishes Re'echa, don't covet your friend's wife. And so on. Sadeu, Sharei, Avdoi, Amasai, Sharei, Chamarei, V'chol Asher Re'echa, servants, his animals, whatever he has. In the second version, it says, Lo sachmod eshes reyecha, first, don't covet your friend's wife. And then it says, Lo sisave, uses a different term for desire, don't desire the house of your friend, the field of your friend, and so on and so forth. So why these differences? Right? And so the Maharal speaks about the idea of how the second Luchos were more the people than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you remember, his whole theory about Sefer Dvarim is the Torah starts off in the hand of Hashem and ends off in the hands of the people. Right? So when it starts off in the hands of Hashem, it's more Hashem-like. When it ends off in the hands of the people, it's a little more people-like. Right? If I give you a gift of an apartment, or if I sell you my apartment, right, when you get it, it has the carpeting that I put in, it has the paint that I put on, it has the furniture arranged the way I arranged it. Over time, as you're there, you're going to shift around the furniture, you're going to repaint the walls, you're going to change the carpet. Right? It's more mine at the moment that I give it to you than it is sometime later. Says the Maharal that the first expression is much higher than the second expression. Because even though it's a prohibition against desire, but the desire still works with some level of wisdom. And we know the path of wisdom is that first a person, the Torah says, first a person figures out how they're going to manage their household, and then they get married. First they build a house, and then they get a wife. However, so that's why in the first commandment it says, don't desire your friend's house, because the person's going to be going around there. You're thinking, well, I have to establish myself first. Well, that's a nice house. So they're not like completely ruled by their mind. They're ruled by desire, but it's still a mind-like desire. Whereas in the second Dibros, straight for the wife. And then Tisave, Maral explains, is a worse, more base term of desire, which we get to. Even when it speaks about the wife in the second Dibros, it's still chemda because it's a human relationship. It's still higher than the house and so on and so forth. That's what the Maharal spoke with. So I talk about it a little bit, but just the point, really, what I was trying to make was the following. Chazal tell us, and it's, you think about it, you see it, that at Har Sinai, it was like we were back in Gan Eden. We sinned, we were originally in Gan Eden, then we messed up, and we got exiled from Gan Eden. And at Har Sinai, we brought ourselves back. Hashem brought us back. We said Nasa v'Nishma, we were back with Hashem, seeing Hashem like in Gan Eden, restored to immortality, Sinai Hospital, right, like in Gan Eden, that whole thing. That's what happened. What's the last word that Hashem says to us in Gan Eden? The last word. He said, don't desire. What got us kicked out of Gan Eden? Why did Adam HaRishon sin with the Eitz Hadas? So I know you could give me 100 philosophical explanations, or 10, or 3, or even 1. But the Torah describes it in the following way. The woman looked at the tree, and she saw that it was nechmad lemare, nechmad lahaskil, tava le'enayim. It uses both words, chemda and tava. Now the truth is, the word chemda is not necessarily pusel, it's not necessarily terrible. As the Maharal says, it's a higher term. When it describes the other trees in the garden, they were also nechmad lemare, they were also attractive, but this was nechmad and tava, tava le'enayim. What they did was a sin of desire. we can have philosophical underpinnings and backgrounds to that, but what it was a sin of desire. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael as they're standing with him at Gan Eden on Har Sinai, the last word after all these other instructions I'm giving you, Lo Sachmid, don't desire, don't covet. It's gonna tear you out of here. It's gonna pull you out of your natural situation, and you know, maybe this is part of the answer to Ryan's question. It did kill us. It did kill us. It brought us into the realm of mortality. I still recognize your question because it didn't, you know, but it did have a dramatic effect. Right? Sinai, to what Penn asked, Sinai is our original condition. Gan Eden is our original condition. Right? The Gemara looks even in us now to find the indications that Omdu Avaisav al Har Sinai, that we still demonstrate the characteristics of someone that we stood, that our parents stood at Har Sinai. We don't lose that character. We get lost a little bit along the way, but we don't lose it completely. Here, to get back to ground, here, the Maharal says, this is where the person gets dangerously close. And the Maharal uses this to explain the Chavdal Dvorim HaMa'akfin HaSatshuva. Right, there's a list which is given of things that get in the way of tshuva. It's not in the Gemara, it's a brisa. The Rishonim bring it, the Rif brings it, the Rambam brings it. It's the beginning of the Rambam's fourth parak of Hilchas Tshuva. Arbov Esrim Dvar Ma'akev Nesat Tshuva. There are 24 things that are ma'akev, that hold up, or that stand in the way of tshuva. He says four of them are a big sin, and a person who does this, Hashem doesn't allow the person to do tshuva because of the greatness of the chet. Five of them lock the ways of tshuva before those who do them. You have to understand how the Rambam lists everything else. The 24 things. What are these 24 things? Or what do these 24 things have in common? So the Maharal goes through all 24. And I'm not going to go through all 24 of them with you. And the truth is, if you would ask me, well, why isn't this on the list? Or I don't understand exactly why this one is so different than something else, I won't be able to answer you every detail. But I'll tell you what the Maharal says as the aside, as the foundational principle of the 24 things. You ever have something where you see somebody do something, or you hear about somebody doing something, and you just say, What? You see people do all kinds of things, and you say, shouldn't have done that. It's not nice. I try not to do that. But sometimes it's like, what? Right? It's like so astounding. How disoriented must this person be from goodness, from reality, from truth, from the way things ought to be, that they would do that? That's the Maharal's yesod. That's the way the Maharal understands the 24 things of tshuva. In other words, as long as the person still has the compass and it's the arrow's pointed north, you know, things are in the right direction, okay? Sometimes you do everything right, and sometimes you don't. Right? It's understood. You look at a person does it, they slipped. They did something which is not good, not to be proud of, but within the pale. That is such a distortion that we say they've lost direction completely. In that context, it's ma'akev es hatshuva. Okay, let me remind you of one thing we learned from the Maharal before, which was akin to this, though not as dramatic. What was akin to this? We had in the Gemara, we had one of the Gemaras which read is Kimin she'avar adam avera v'shanaba nasis lo'keheter. If a person did an avera and then did it again, it becomes as if it's permitted. What does that mean? So the way the Maharal explained it was simply with this third principle of tshuva. which is, and it's mamash just the articulation of the third principle of tshuva, which is, if you do something and you say, oh, right, you're another chazal, which we spoke about in this context, you were oisid varavir umis bayashem, and you felt bad about it, right? So then that means, okay, I did something wrong, but I know I did something wrong. I'm still the good person who just did something wrong. But says the Gemara, if you do it over and over again, the sensitivity to the fact that you've done that you're doing something wrong disappears. Slowly but surely, it disappears. You become callous to the whole matter. And therefore, it's hard to come back. Right? When you have still the conscience, it's easy to turn up the volume on the pinging sound that your conscience makes when you do something wrong. It's much harder when the pinging sound has faded into oblivion, when it's not there anymore. Nasis leketer. That's the way the Maral understands those things. And over here, he's not describing a person doing an aveira repeatedly, but he's describing certain actions which are so different that it's hard to see that the sensitivities are still intact. Let me give you a couple of examples so you understand what I mean, what we mean. Haraya esbenai yaitzei letarbus ra'a ve'enai meicha. A person sees their child getting lost. Yaitzei letarbus ra'a literally means going out to a negative culture. Okay, now that sounds very elaborate, or so I don't know how else to tarbut in modern Hebrew we speak about as a culture, but but he's getting into a world of negative values, and he doesn't do anything about it. So says the Maral, "Dover ze ein ada seivel." It doesn't make sense. Uzar, it's so strange. Shira b'na yaitzel l'tarbus ro. Veina meicha. He sees this happening and he just sits around. V'cheik meizehu asara l'gamrei. He says this is just completely like removed. A person loves their child. If a person values this, how could they see their son, their child throwing throwing that away? It's like such a level of insensitivity to the issue. How can you? Makivatshuva. Another example. Hamalig al hamitzvahs. A person who makes fun of certain mitzvahs, of certain good practices. Again, you know, it's one thing you say, look, I can't do it. But to turn around and to undermine it, to taunt it, to ridicule it, person has dug themselves a hole that they've created opposite sensitivities, it seems, to those of the Torah. And I'm literally just, you know, flipping the page and looking at something, because the examples are varied.
And would there be things, nonetheless, that we have individually maybe gone off, you know, so that we don't? We see it so much, you know, that we're used to it, or,
you know,
that we need the
list
to remind us how bad it is.
Okay, I'll give you one. Okay, but give me a couple more to warm up. he says, "Mekabel sheichad lahata is din." A judge who accepts a bribe. Maybe this is not relevant for most of us, right? But a judge who accepts a bribe to deviate the din. He says, "What are you called again? What's your title again? What's your job again? Your job is a judge, right? The person who society looks to in order to adjudicate, in order to provide truth and justice in the land, and you are taking a bribe." Now this reminds me of precious Rabbeinu Yaina. Now one might say Rabbeinu Yaina is an apologetic, right? In his question you might say he's an apologetic. Sometimes the Rishonim and the commentaries wrote things imagining, which was often the case, that somebody was looking over their shoulder at what they were writing. Big Brother was watching, and they had to be careful. So in the question, it may sound apologetic, but the answer which he says is a foundational principle Rabbeinu Yonah says in more than one place. So therefore, I suspect that even though the question in this case sounds apologetic, but it wasn't really. This is the question. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Hevu zehirin barashus, be very careful with government. Because a makarvan la'adam ela l'tzarech atzman, they'll bring people close when they need them. They look like friends when it benefits them, but they're not there for you when you need them. Okay? Now, anybody who follows the American political system will not have a tremendously hard time with that, with that thing, when you know about campaign contributions and everything else, right? And in a democratic system, in a certain sense, that Mishnah, I mean, with all the strengths, which we wouldn't trade, of a democratic system, in a democratic system, in a certain sense, we're more vulnerable to these problems than others, because you have to curry the favor of the people in order to be elected and re-elected. But Rabbeinu Yonah is horrified by the simple translation of this Mishnah. And Rabbeinu Yonah says, what? You're going to tell me that it means this literally? Come on. If you can't trust government, who can you trust? I mean, they're the people who are supposed to be taking care of the whole society. Now, you can easily say, yeah, he was writing that because he knew that the government was reading what he was saying, so they wanted to go and say something nice. Right? It could be. But what Rabbeinu Yonah goes on to say, to learn Pshat in that Mishnah, is with a principle he says in many places, which is that he says that you can try to be friendly with people and get favors from them, and it works, and it may work as they are climbing the rungs of power, but once they're really in control, they lose control completely, because Hashem runs the world, and decisions of kings, Lev Melech biyad Hashem el koach shechafetz yatanu, kings, right? Everybody gets upset at Obama or Lahavdil at Sharon or at this one or that. Oh, we'll get a new government. Everybody knows the new government is the old government, and the old government is new government. They all, right? Why? Because big decisions Hashem doesn't let some guy make. It's the world. Come on. So says, look, you're going to go and you're going to create all these things to lobby and to be friendly with the government, and then you're going to find out they can't do anything for you. The friendship can't do anything for you, because ultimately there's somebody else you have to make friends with. Someone else, I should say, that you have to make friends with. Right? So that's why Rabbi Nehemiah says that principle in so many places, and it's such a truth, right? Now you could say it's still maybe it's not the translation of this Mishnah. Rabbi Nehemiah is so horrified. And his horror is the same horror that the Maharal expresses here. A judge is going to take a bribe? That's not just an Aveira. You know, like he went and he did something wrong and he took some money. How do you wake up in the morning? How do you don those black robes? There's no conscience there. If a person who's put in a position to give truth and justice and he's taking kickbacks? Come on. I mean, if the guy's, you know, the chairman of the housing department, and he takes a few bucks from a contractor so that he's not going to have an open bidding or that he'll steer it in his direction, mele, nu. Can understand how the guy can wake up in the morning. Lebaisi, he's building houses. That's his job. To save the most money, it would be a nice thing if he did that. But a judge, to take money, to do the opposite of his job? There's no person there. There's nobody there. That's what the Maharal says. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Government, not for the people? Come on. Right? So he says that closes the door of tshuva. Another example he brings. Eichel suda sheina maspekes lebalea. A person who eats from a meal that the owner doesn't have enough for himself. Suda sheina maspekes lebalea. So he says, come on. How can you take a gift from somebody when you know it's killing them, so to speak? You know, like, yeah. You know, like, you don't have an appetite for that? When you know right? You know, the guy's not giving his kids something because of supper, because he's giving you supper. Like, where's your appetite? You have an appetite? You still have an appetite? Okay, the guy hides it, it's one thing, but, you know, you have an appetite? Right? Morale, one after the other, these things he speaks about, like a just a complete disorientation. That's Makif Tshuva, because that means the pinging sound is gone. The conscience isn't working anymore. Are you ready for the one which is a hard one? This is a hard one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Hamistakel ba'arayas. One who gazes at women that he's not supposed to gaze at. So he says, Dover ze bevade oduk b'yoser ba'aveira, ki oisa aveira b'nefesh, shu mistakel ba'aveira. The Maral says that here the person is sinning b'nefesh. He says if a person is chayte with znus itself, they're sinning with their body. But when a person is gazing, well, the sight, gazing, is much more connected to the soul. Maral writes about this many places. Right, we see it as part of the koyach of a person. When we speak about ma'ir einav shel adam, the light in a person's eyes, which the Gemara says is negatively affected by nistakel be'avera. It's the very vitality of the person. Says the Maral, that can be something which really just like undermines the personality of the person. And again, I think we can understand it, and I think that probably we would be tempted to say, well, that's talking about where the person is, which unfortunately nowadays happens so much more frequently than it used to, where a person is addicted to these images, but not, you know, a place a person just takes a fleeting look at, you know, at somebody beautiful that walks by. Is that mistakel be'erva? And maybe it's not mistakel. Usually the term mistakel means to gaze, not to glance, but it's a very significant thing. It's a very significant thing.
So he's talking about a place or a society maybe or something where somebody might actually do a bearers, but they would never like leer it. They wouldn't like really.
Yeah, he remarkably contrasts doing it with gazing at it. And doing it, he's willing to write off as a physical desire, which the person has, which they do, finished. But when that's what the person is gazing at, it implies more of an obsession that's soul-rooted. And it's, again, it's a big chiddush. It's a big chiddush, and it's a sobering thing.
You see, I mean, the way Rebbe was explaining the ones before, they were all with the what principle. The way Rebbe said this, it doesn't sound like it's the what principle.
Correct.
It sounds like it's a different principle.
Correct. It's still, however, he's saying that because that's a function of the nefesh, it may not be so surprising, but it's a function of the nefesh, it's a disorientation. It's a fundamental disorientation. You're right. I couldn't use my what principle as much for this.
It's interesting because in the secular world, it's so common to hear, especially in marriage circles, it doesn't hurt to look. I'm not doing anything, God forbid, but it doesn't hurt to look. And this is so fascinating because this is shows, are you kidding? It absolutely destroys to look.
Right. Right. This is not just the Maharal. It's not just the Maharal. It destroys to look. And when you drive down the street, and plastered on the sides of buses are advertisements for restaurants where you go to look. There were always such things, but they were hidden in some back alley someplace. They weren't a chain. Right? They didn't start their own airline. It's a very, very, very. It's frightening. It's a frightening thing, And but I, what I was saying is that you, the specific sex addiction of mistakil is clearly having its own specific, very devastating pathology that in certain ways is worse than action. Right? Action is so to speak, there's actually a relationship. I mean, we wouldn't call it a relationship, you know, but there's the other person, you know, does something with somebody and so on and so forth, and you know, like how much. But mistakel be'erv bavera is unlimited. It's mamish unlimited. There's no limitations on it, and it's the person just by themselves. They're just twisting their soul into things. They're not like, you know, there's a reality to this. I'm not familiar enough with the literature to tell you things, you know, specific things, but it's something which ro'im, which we see it, and unfortunately, you know, we have to realize how, you know, it's not just, you know, Amish type rabbis who worry about this. It's not Amish type rabbis who worry about this. In every segment of the world community, forget the Jewish community, the prevalence of pornography addiction amongst adults, amongst young people, amongst children, because of the availability of it, the accessibility of it, is horrible. And you know, with devastating effect. I the first time I gave a big talk about the internet, it's already going back quite a number of years, I read from the testimony of the vice president of AOL to the Senate Commerce or Finance Committee, whichever one it was, which handled internet. And from AOL, from a different one. This was from the one of the presidents of the ABA, the American Bar Association, Matrimonial Law Division, who said that 10 years before, pornography was not a statistically significant factor in divorce. It wasn't statistically significant, which means that it wasn't 1%. He says, and now it is, was already, I don't remember exactly the number, it was already 7-point-something% or something like that, a factor in divorce, and you can only imagine how that number gallops along with the rapid growth of accessibility of these things. That's what he speaks about. It can undermine the essence. This is what the Maral teaches there. So, okay. You wanted, Ben, you wanted to ask something? Or?
No.
Okay.
Just my topic.
Then Ryan's question, wouldn't this simplistic answer be that, you know, one is gradual and one is immediate, so notice to, yes, maybe it's destructive, but it's over time, so it doesn't jar the soul in one direction or another. But then to try and immediately turn around and do tshuva is, you know, that's all the shift
nice,
at once.
Nice, it could be. Also, could be. Maybe there could be a gradual tshuva, one would ask, but I hear the question, yeah.
The other thing is, I was just trying to remember, because I remember in the Gemara, I don't remember if the Gemara or the Rishonim talk about that maybe the Misa is not so much a physical reaction, it's more of a gift. Is that the Gemara, or is that a different approach? I don't remember. In other words, Hashem does that so that the person will never do it again, but it's not the way
the
Maharal.
The Gemara doesn't say that.
Okay, that's one of the... Okay.
Yeah.
So he's
right. Okay. Okay. So, if we may, let us just continue to the Maral's, finish with the Maral's explanation of the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya, which is less, I mean, the principles we understand already. He just, as he always does, takes every aspect of the story, every detail, and explains why it's significant. So we'll take at least some of what he says. The first thing that he speaks about is his name, the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Dodaya. And he says his name is a combination of sin and shuva. Dodaya is a term which is used for the sediment that sits at the bottom of a barrel of wine. That's what it means, Dodaya. And that's the junk. That's the chazarai. And in that sense, right, he says, just as a interesting comparison, he says many times they call a Russia, Ben Tzadik called himself Chaimetz Ben Yayin, vinegar that came from wine, which means that it's the negative, the chaff of the wine. So this is also the chaff of the wine. And he says Ben Dodaya means he was chaff, was pulp, sediment, the stuff that sits at the bottom of the barrel. However, his name was Elazar ben Dodaya. And Elazar, the name Elazar is Kel Azar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps. And we know that when it comes to tshuva, that's the rule. Habo l'tayr mesayin esay. When it comes to purify, Hashem helps them. And therefore, he had built in this ben Dodaya, this person with the rishus, the evil, had built in the capacity for tshuva. Maral, almost enigmatically, or Hartman struggles to explain it, seems to say almost that because he was so ready for tshuva, that's why he ended up sinning. Like we had before with David HaMelech, whatever that means. But the idea was he had in him both the capacity for dramatic sin and for this capacity for tshuva. That's what he sees in his name. Very typical sort of interpretation in that sense of the Maral. The Gemara goes on and says that he pursued every Zayna in the world. I alluded to this when I was telling you the story. This is what the Maral says. He says he risked his life by traveling overseas. He bothered himself. Right, so that's Nafshay. Gufay is he bothered himself. It was a big bother to travel over seven seas in order to go someplace. And he spent a tremendous amount of money. That's, in a certain sense, excuse the expression, with all of your energy, with your life, and with your money. That's how connected to Aveira Elazar ben Dodaya was. And the Maral says, and it says he traveled over seven seas. Like whenever you have seven is the term for savea, for completion. And he says, even though she was so far apart from him, but still, nothing would stand between him and going after this woman. When he was with her, as they were preparing, heficha, right? So she passed gas, and she said, the same way this will not be able to be brought back, this gas will not be able to return, so too you cannot return. So says the Maral, that's the thing. It's gone. The level of sin which you have come to is that you're somebody else. You've changed. You're not the same person who's done something wrong, like we said before, but you're gone. You're something else. You're somebody else. So therefore, you can't go back to your place. That's the way, that's level one that he explains it. And then he says something else, because it's such a weird Gemara. You know, like you say, the Gemara over, it's like strange, what does Hafacha? Says the Maral, a very nice thing, very significant thing. He says, it's air. Right? Poof, gas. It's like nothing. Just, and the most negative nothing, it's not even like good air. He says, Chazal say, what's the word zima? Zima is the word for this kind of immorality, lust. Zima, say Chazal, is zu mahi. What is it? What is it? says the Maharal, a person who spends his life pursuing meaningless things is meaningless. Elazar ben Derdaya, look at him. He's taking all of his time, all of his energy, all of his money, risking his life for what? For what? She says, you're like a puff of foul-smelling air. That's what you are. You are what you pursue. You are what you pursue, beyond the pshat that, oh, it went, it can come back, you're a different person. That's what you are. You know, there's a famous, also Rabbeinu Yaina, who says, Mitzraf lakesef ekur lazav v'ish l'fi mahalalai. Where you tell silver, you put it in a smelting thing, you see the quality which comes out, the impurities separate. Similar thing for gold. A person, how do you test and identify the quality of a person? Lafima halalai, according to his praises. So what does that mean? So some translate, well, you got to hear what people say about him. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, nah, don't listen to that. Listen to what he praises. Listen to what motivates him. Listen to what excites him. That's what he is. This Zayna, who made a living from guys like this, but Elazar ben Derdaya was an extreme. Said, look, you know, I have some guy who maybe comes by, you know, for some reasons, one thing, but this is your life. Give me a break. You're an airbag, not the kind that protects people in accidents, right? You're nothing. What are you? That's what you pursue. That's your life. Zumahi. That's the Maral's additional understanding of this thing. Yeah.
Is there an element of that that reflects on the rhetorical question of what substance is this act itself? I mean, he's pursuing this, but doesn't the Maral sometimes talk about that the act of lust, it leads to nothing? There is no substance to it. It's a
fleeting
moment. It's a fleeting desire, mm-hmm, that when satisfied, it's as if it never existed. And in that context, of course,
that's the strength of the person who does it. Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. All part of the zumahi of it. It's nothing. Yeah. So just in the finishing off of the Gemara, he says, "Let the sun and the moon pray for me. Let the mountains pray for me." All of these things. So the Maral says that the idea is that he says, look, I may not be perfect, but let me be a part of you. Right? Pray for me. I'm part of the world. Am I that gone? Am I lost completely? Maybe I can at least, you know, piggyback on something else. Well, it sounds like what the Gemara is asking. And the answer which they all give is that, you know, you can't really, because for the world what you have to go to, we're not going to be there. In the world of the Olam Haba, it's not a world which is held up by the physical. It's not a world which contains the mountains, the valleys, the sun and the moon and the stars and everything else. It's something which you have to, in a part inside of you which is beyond the physical, that you have to connect to. And that's the way the Maral explains, that's the idea where he put his head between his knees and he was overwhelmed with crying, and till his soul left him, this was this idea. thank you very much. Right, this was this idea that he realized that nothing else, all of what he was used to, his entire definition of himself was around physicality, and he had to completely separate from it. And says, well, that's why in the end, what do they say? They call him Rebbe. Why do they call him Rebbe? Because what's Rebbe supposed to be? Rebbe is a person who teaches wisdom. He had to separate so completely from his physicality to realize that his tshuva wasn't taking place even in a world of mountains and a world of sun and moon and stars, but it had to be mamish on the level of the spiritual that's completely there. He had to go to his core right? A part of him which was so, so lost, so covered up, so gone, and he had to make it everything. That's Rebbe. That's where what's controlling is not the Leisachmaid, but the Reish, the head, the Isa Emes, from Yeshu Emes, the recognizing the truth and being motivated by the truth. The Torah, which is the antithesis of the Tava, of the Yetzirah, the Tavlin of the Yetzirah. That's what he had to do. And that was the transformation. This really brings us back to the beginning of the Maral, to principle one. Principle one of the Maral, if Tshuva, remember, was what? Was you have to have Das to come to Tshuva. You have to think. Tshuva comes when you don't decide, when matter rules over mind. This return of Elazar ben Dardai, he's called Rebbe. Rebbe's the intellectual teacher, the teacher of wisdom. That's what Elazar ben Dardai had to come to. So he had to separate from everything else. And that was what completed his tshuva. Okay. Again, we never finish the works of the Maral, both because we always leave out little pieces and because our understanding is limited. But this completes our study for now of this magnificent section of the Nesiveis Olam called the Nesiveis Tshuva. What will we do next? It's anyone's guess. What should we do next? The natural candidate to do next, especially because right now is where it is to do Ner Mitzvah, which is about Chanukah. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, sure.
We'll do what we can. I mean, Ner Mitzvah is divided up into two parts. One is about the four kingdoms, the Arba Malchias, which Yavan is one of them, and the other is about the mitzvah of Chanukah itself. So we'll see what we'll do. I really, really want to get to the Guras Hashem. Hartman didn't write on it yet. What?
Is that Pesach?
That's Yetzias Mitzrayim, yeah. But let's assume right now we'll do Ner Mitzvah, at least until Chanukah.
Rabbi Hartman has done Ner Mitzvah.
Yeah. It's a thin one like that.
Quick question, I'm sorry to review this. The difference between natural desire and unnatural